Best Energy with naturopath and medical intuitive Dr. Rita Louise. We have learned from Einstein's theories that matter and energy are one. Physicists believe that all systems in nature have their own particular way of vibrating. From the swing of a pendulum to the waves in the ocean to the light that brightens the sky each day, each of these oscillates at its own unique rate. In the same way, things such as rocks and minerals vibrate very slowly and at speeds that are imperceptible to us. Living things such as plants, animals, and man vibrate faster and appear to be alive. The same holds true for every thought, feeling, event, or word we speak. Each has its own frequency or rate of vibration. What many of us don't realize is if we take everything in our own universe down to its simplest form, it is all just energy. Join Dr. Rita as she explores questions such as, what are we made of? Why do we get sick? How can I live a more balanced and whole life? Call in and talk to her and her thought-provoking guests. Send us your questions and get the help you need to move beyond any obstacle or challenges that may be affecting your life, right from the source. So stay tuned and explore your possibilities.
Welcome to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise, and thank you all for tuning into the show today. Today, it always seems to happen, but today is 9/11. Obviously, everyone remembers what happened 8 years ago today, and without really spending a whole lot of time talking about it or going into that whole thing, you know, I would just like to take a moment to allow us to reflect or, you know, have a moment of quiet time regarding that whole topic of 9/11 and just taking the opportunity to acknowledge it, send our prayers to the people who have passed, the friends, families, and loved ones of those people who died in that tragic accident. Well, not accident, but you know what I mean. So let's just take a moment of silence where we can all just connect with ourselves, connect with our hearts and minds with those who have lost loved ones today, 8 years ago. So today's guest is Eldon Taylor, and we're going to be talking about mind programming. Not energy medicine, but mind programming, which is very cool. So Eldon Taylor is the author of the New York Times best-selling book, Choices and Illusions, and his latest book, Mind Programming, From Persuasion to Brainwashing to Self-Help and Practical Metaphysics. He has been researching the power of the mind for the past 25 years and considered to be an expert in the area of hypnosis and subliminal communication. Eldon has earned doctoral degrees in psychology and metaphysics and is a fellow with the American Psychotherapy Association and a non-denominational minister. So please welcome to Just Energy Radio, Eldon Taylor. Hi, Eldon. How are you?
Well, I am wonderful. Thank you very much for inviting me on, and I'm terribly sorry. I owe you a deep apology for being late. I was here ready for the call and then had this emergency slip, but we'll make up for it.
Well, and we will. Eldon, I love your book.
You very much.
And I understand that you had a book release, you know, because the book is brand new, and you had a big book release this week. How did that go?
It's gone very well. The book is an international bestseller. We won't know for a couple of weeks whether or not it made the New York Times, but it's done very, very well in several countries. So we're very pleased with that. And any of you, those your listening audience, can go to eldontaylor.com and take advantage of that promotion, which had over 100 gifts from luminaries, visionaries that all support the release of this book, just as you are, and take advantage of a special price on it as well. So you just click on the book when you get there, Mind Programming.
I know, and they get a free gift from me because
they
I was part of your little group. That's right.
You have a marvelous free gift as well as doing your show and supporting. You're just a wonderful woman. That's all there is to it. You do wonderful things as well.
Well, I try. You know, I just kind of do what Spirit kicks me in the butt to do, and I just go along go along for the ride sometimes, it seems like. You know, this whole idea of mind programming just makes me, it conjures up, you know, this whole giant conspiracy theory thing in the general sense. And I mean, is that what the books, well, I mean, I write it, so this is
kind of a leading question. Sure. Sure. You ask the leading questions. You know that the answer to that is yes and no. The first half of the book deals with the dark side of things. And I mean, the dark side is dark. Let me back up just a little bit and kind of set a framework here. I wanted to write this book because for years and years, my profession, my background was in criminalistics, and I ran lie detection tests, owned supervised intelligence, counterintelligence operations, did investigations, and was involved in that entire area. And, you know, I could say honestly that my study of the mind, at least from a standpoint of being consciously aware that, oh, that's why I'm so interested in the mind, kind of aha, took place back at that time, because I would meet people, I would see subjects, I would have conversations, I would conduct interrogations, and I would be asking myself for days afterwards, why do they do that? I don't get that. I mean, why would somebody come in and confess to a capital crime when, you know, it's more important for them to maybe be seen by me as being honest in a situation and telling me the truth as opposed to protecting themselves from a life in prison. And that's just a example. And my work started there and went, of course, out to the Utah State Prison where we ran some double-blind studies. But what I saw over and over again was what you might say goes like this. We have people who have no original thoughts. I know that you've heard this, and I know you've encountered it, but these are people that are truly asleep. Now, a lot of them want to wake up, and a lot of them think they're awake, but they're not aware of just how much they have been imprinted by their society, even their government. The fact of the matter is, what I wanted to show in the first half of the book is that billions and billions and billions of dollars have been spent by those that would advertise a product to you, by those that want your money or want your mind, want your ideas, by the politicians, for that matter, by our government. Jules Romain reported on a CIA study on brainwashing to Congress, and in his report he said, quote, "We know now that men can be made to do exactly anything. It's all a question of finding the right means. If only we take enough trouble and go sufficiently slowly, we can make him kill his aged parents and eat them in a stew." Now, it doesn't get a whole lot more gross or grotesque than that.
Well, and you can't even believe that someone would think that.
No, you're right. Most of us, we go through our lives, and, you know, if we see a movie or something and it portrays one of our intelligence agencies as doing something evil or demonic, we don't tend to think that, well, they do that for real. And, you know, some of the cases that leaked out that came into public purview that were declassified back during the church hearings and when Casey was a CIA director, some of those experiments with LSD and other drugs and innocent people that died, well, they may be in the back of some textbook, or they may be in the back of your mind from way, way back, some newspaper clipping. But in today's era, we don't even think about it. We, you know, as much as we think about that is waterboarding. That's where our minds are today. We're not in that situation. We're not being waterboarded. So we're not really thinking of this entire area of training, of learning, of education that our governments went through because of the Korean War, because of our involvements in watching other governments do brainwashing with our own military, and because of the sophistication that has arisen from the work of almost one man, Edward Bernays, the founder of what you could call modern propaganda. And, you know, Bernays was Sigmund Freud's nephew, and he looked at Freud's work and said, you know, wow, now that we have plumbed the unconscious, if we can use these tools, these unconscious tools, to tweak the society's level of understanding, if we can use these unconscious tools to manipulate people, we can sell them lots of products, we can get them to do what we want to do. And in his book, Propaganda, he basically states that he believes that it is the incumbent duty of the elite, that would be the ruling class and those with the money, to practice propaganda, to put this information out in a way that it makes the masses believe that they're making choices that they want to do, when indeed they're doing what the elite wants them to do, because otherwise they would just simply be ungovernable.
Well, you know, you made the comment about, you know, people aren't aware of it, and I think if people thought about it, you know, I don't think they want to believe it's true. I mean, it's like all the conspiracy theory that's like, well, if this one's true, I mean, you know, while you weren't here, we did a quiet memoriam to 9/11, you know, did a moment of silence. And, you know, Charlie Sheen just put out a YouTube video to Obama about reopening the 9/11 investigation, you know, mm-hmm. because he thinks that the United States was implicit in it and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, so if this conspiracy is shown to be true, it's like, well, what about these other conspiracies and these other ones? And it's kind of overwhelming, the amount of impact of the propaganda.
It is absolutely frightening, just staggering and frightening, when you realize the scope by which this could reach. But, you know, for relevance to me, yeah, what I didn't want to do was, you know, develop some new conspiracy or become a conspirator, because I don't believe in that stuff. In fact, you know, forgive me, but I think Sheen's out to lunch. The bottom line is, what I wanted to do was this. Look, if you're all about waking up, if you're on a path to self-improvement, if you have decided that you want to maximize your life, and that's the area that I wanted to focus in, the area that I have spent my work on since I got out of criminalistics. If that's what you want to empower yourself, to self-actualize, to feel good about life, to have joy, to have the magic in your relationships, to have good health, to maximize the gifts that are you, if that's what you want, then the very first thing you have to do is stop and say, who am I? And most people have not done that. Most people have practiced, they've fantasized their scripts, they've practiced them, they've automatized them into beliefs, they have become self-alienated. So the goals that they have, their ambitions, the way they walk, the way they talk, the way they dress, their hand gestures, their expectations, the kind of car they drive, you name it, you think of it, it has been sold to them, including their point of view. You know, indeed, some of this is so subtle that it just sneaks up on you. It's kind of like, well, Britain's Got Talent, America's Got Talent. Everybody saw Susan Boyle. You remember Susan Boyle, don't you, Rita?
Refresh my memory.
Okay, the disheveled singer from England that was on Britain's Got Talent. I mean, her YouTube played to millions of people. But here was a woman that stood up in front of the judges, and for all intent and purposes, I mean, this looked like, you know, this woman wouldn't, I mean, she's totally unattractive. I'm trying to be kind here. Was completely disheveled, had clothing that was inappropriate for the occasion. You know, looked like maybe she had just come off a pumpkin wagon. And everybody in the audience was laughing. They were prepared for, you know, oh boy, you know. And the judges were shaking their head. And when this woman opened her mouth, out came some of the most glorious music you have ever heard. Now, everyone I've talked to that's seen this was just taken back. They were just shocked that this woman could sing so beautifully. But what that calls into question is, why is it that we think a singer should look a certain way? Why would we be surprised by that? Let me give you a better one that I know you'll be aware of. You know who Jesse Jackson is?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, civil rights activist, he tells a story that one evening after a presentation, he's walking back to his hotel. He's alone. It's after dark, big city. I think it was Detroit. But he's on his way back to the hotel, and he hears some heavy, fast footsteps coming up from behind him. He becomes alarmed. He turns quickly. He sees it's a white person, and he's relieved. Now, imagine the chagrin that Jesse Jackson felt when he realized this. He tells this with great embarrassment. But this is an example of how we can all carry these implicit assumptions and biases around in our head that form our decision processes, even when we're not consciously aware of it. In fact,
so he was. And this sounds awful, but he was relieved it wasn't an African American.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. In his head was
bad.
In his head was the assumption that where he was, he could be in trouble because of, and his expectation was, if it is, I'm in trouble. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, that is a great embarrassment for someone of the stature of Jesse Jackson's civil rights. But we all have these implicit biases. We're just blinded to them. In fact, anyone that's interested in discovering their own, and I guarantee you everyone has them, Harvard University has a site on the web. You can do a quick Google for implicit assumptions, Harvard, and there they have tests that you can take. So you can determine whether or not you have biases toward sex or race or age or all the gamut of things that people have biases for. But in addition to these biases, we're context bound. We've been blinded by the way we're taught. Now, you know, most people believe education is about, our school system is about education. But as I point out in the book, it's absolutely not. It was not founded for education. It was founded for socialization, and it was a copy of a Prussian model from the 1800s. So when someone sees that maybe textbooks are rewriting history, or someone finds out that the University of Delaware requires that individuals living on campus, if they're white, admit that they are racist because they couldn't possibly know what it was like. Otherwise, they weren't born of a minority, and therefore, you know, they have to claim that they're racist, and that the school calls this an ideological re-education that is totally appropriate. Okay, now, I'm not taking on the issue. What I am pointing out, however, is that our system is about indoctrination. It's about socialization as much or more than education. I'd say more. So with that context, think of this. You are taught one and one is two, period, empirically, always. That's it, right? So when I demonstrate, as I do, that a gallon of alcohol and a gallon of water does not equal 2 gallons, people are flabbergasted. Children amused, adults astonished. It's not possible. They're looking for the magic because they absolutely know that one and one always equals two. Okay,
so what does it equal? Well, wait a minute. What does it equal?
it's less than 2 gallons when you add it. There's a chemical.
Well, you know,
go ahead.
Oh, there's. Well, I'm just thinking, you know, it says a gallon, but, you know, they're always short anyway.
No, you can measure it yourself. You know, it's a fun experiment. But here, take this. Rita, someone comes to your door tonight. someone you know. They knock on your door, you answer it, it's 8, 9 o'clock at night, a little late, and they say, Rita, if you've got a 3x7 piece of wood, I could win $10,000 in the scavenger hunt I'm in. If you do that, I'll split the money with you. I haven't got a wood pile. Gee, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And you close your 3x7 wood door. Because it's a door. It's not a piece of wood. You sell
it's
that
not
door
a
3x7
piece of wood. Wow.
Yeah, but you'd sell it for $5,000, wouldn't you?
Probably.
Mine would come off the hinges in a moment. Okay?
Well,
now,
especially if you saw my front door. I could use a new front door. So it's like, $5,000 would get me a really nice new front door.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Now, this is, you know, these are examples of how our thinking gets bound. So here's my thing.
But you're not really saying the bad word, you know. You're not saying manipulated.
No, but when I'm through, you'll see that you have been. Because now, look, I want you to think of the saliva in your mouth, Rita.
Mm-hmm.
Your listening audience, think of the saliva in your mouth. And I want you to roll it around. I want you to notice how good it feels, how good it tastes, and how glad you are you have it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that has a dry mouth or has ever had a dry mouth knows how bad that is. Now, I want you to imagine you have a little shot glass in front of you, and you're just going to spit some of that saliva into that shot glass. You spit it in,
okay,
and you look at it. Now, look at it. You can probably see some air bubbles in it, right? What I want you to do now is drink it back, okay? Now, what happens as soon as you say, knock it back, drink it back, is people go, ooh, ooh. Now, why is that? Because it's separated from your mouth by what, 10 seconds, 3 seconds, 30 seconds? It is the saliva in your mouth that is so important, feels so good, and tastes so good. Why is spit in the glass, is it so bad?
Well, I mean, that's kind of like using somebody else's toothbrush. Ugh. You know, somebody that you're,
your
husband or wife, well, you know, but like your husband's or wife's toothbrush, you know.
Yeah, but it's not. It is yours. It's not even comparable. Think about
yeah,
this,
okay.
Rita. I mean, the fact is, it is your saliva. It was in your mouth 3 seconds, 1 second before. But in the glass,
okay, but it makes
file.
My stomach kind of turn, okay?
Right. So now, if your thinking has been controlled that way, by definitions and meaning, such that what is fine in one context, 1 second later in a different context is vile, then how much of your thinking is really your thinking? You know, there's a belief that if you can control definitions, you can control the minds of people. And there is an overt effort today in our society to control definitions. So we see, you know, we have legal regimes. What's a legal regime? Regimes are, you know, despotic, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, but now we have some legal regimes. We have preventive detention. We don't have enemies of any kind. We just have preventive detention. Why are we changing? You know, consider this. The National Security Domestic Extremism Dictionary that was released and then called right back by Napolitano, for all intent and purposes, did this. It defined extremism. And these extremist people, these were people that should be watched by law enforcement. Now, let's be clear about this. This dictionary goes to law enforcement across the country. The average Tom, Dick, and Harry does not get this dictionary. So what did they define as being extremist? Pro-lifers, returning vets, those that might support Second Amendment rights, right to bear arms. Generally, you could go down the list. What was named as extremist were the ultra-conservative values. Now, do you think that there's possibly a coincidence between a new dictionary of extremism labeling ultra-conservative values as extreme and the present political environment? Yeah. I want to be apolitical. I don't want to be Republican. I don't want to be Democrat. I don't want to side with either side, because I can take examples from each group and show you that there is an overt effort to control, if you will, your thoughts. And the first way that that is done is to define how you will think about something. And if I define the word, does that not define how you think about it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and a lot of that happens, you know, like you listen to talk radio and you can listen to somebody like, you know, Rush Limbaugh and get one opinion, and then listen to Air America and get a completely different opinion about the exact same thing, and kind of depending on who you listen to more, that's kind of how your opinion will be viewed, or
that's,
you know, how you will look at a situation.
Isn't that true? You will get stuck by what it is that you decide to intake. Now, we know from some brand new research that your thoughts influence not just, you know, what we think of as mentation, how you will view things, the decisions you'll make, but they influence your body, they influence your health, they influence your recovery from disease. This stuff that we have in our mind, this self-talk, this way that we reason, this way that we analyze or process information, this way that we emotionalize. You say Rush Limbaugh. If you listen to Rush Limbaugh for 3 days in a row, you're either going to be pounding on the desk with him or throwing things at the telephone. I mean, the fact of the matter is, or the radio, I should say, the fact of the matter is, I think it's important that we all understand that there are two sides of the story, and that indeed we explore both sides, and that indeed we reject out of hand either without the other. It's important that we come to understand who we really are in order for us to be able to do anything in our lives, let alone get on with what we call self-improvement.
And I totally agree with you. And we're going to be coming up on a commercial break here pretty quick. I mean, I think that the scope of this topic is just huge, you know, because I don't think people, well, you know, as you said, people aren't aware of that input and what they're getting in. But there's the music, which means we need to take a break. I'm Dr. Rita Louise. We're talking to Eldon Taylor about his new book, Mind Programming. His website is eldontaylor.com, and we will be back after these words from our sponsors.
Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise, will return right after these messages.
To energy? Want to explore the world beyond the five senses? Looking for a new career as an alternative healthcare practitioner? Then the Institute of Applied Energetics, Medical Intuition, and Energy Medicine Training Programs may be right for you. Our comprehensive curriculum provides students with a deep understanding of how to detect, evaluate, and transform the subtle body, as well as techniques for correcting energetic imbalances that may underscore a person's ability to experience radiant health. So if you are sensitive to energy, contact the Institute of Applied Energetics right away. Be a catalyst for changing the way healthcare is done around the world. Visit www.appliedenergeticsinstitute.com and start your new career today. How would you like to live long and enjoy great health? How about creating solid bones and whiter teeth, strengthen your heart and eyes, and have radiant, youthful-looking skin? There is an ancient health and longevity secret that has been used for millennia in Egypt, India, and China that can help you achieve this. For the first time in the modern world, Pearlseum brings ancient wellness secrets to you. For more information about Pearlseum, visit www.ancientpearl.com. Before we get back to the show, I want to thank all of you for tuning in to Just Energy Radio this evening. Many of the people I've helped over the years were listeners just like you. If you're at a junction in your life, don't stand alone at this important time. Call me or send me an email. We can set up a private consultation so that you too can experience wholeness in your life. To find out more about the services I offer, visit soulhealer.com.
And now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome back to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise, and we're here talking to Eldon Taylor about his new book, Mind Programming. So, Eldon, you know, before the break, we're talking about manipulation, but I thought as American citizens and as human beings that we had free will.
You know that,
laugh at me.
No, I'm laughing with you because I know you're baiting me again, and you're wonderful. You know. And by the way, I was just thinking. I listened to the commercials that were going on while we were off the air. You know how important our thoughts are to the energies of our body. So maybe we want to pick that up. But I'll take on what you just said. Okay, choice.
Okay.
You know, if you're on a campus today, university campus, anywhere around psychology area, philosophy area, that's a major issue. Do we have free will? The larger body would say no. There is no such thing. Fact of the matter is, we know from hard studies, anatomical studies, using the most sophisticated means now, no longer just evoke potentials with you know, the old-fashioned EEG equipment, but using enhanced magnetic resonance imaging and positron emission tomography and, you know, the very best technologies, we know that before you do anything, before you have a thought, before you move a muscle, it is given to you by areas of the unconscious. In other words, your conscious thought is not really your conscious thought. It's a thought given to you out of the unconscious, the subconscious, okay? Now, if you think about that for a minute, you think, what is it then that's in my subconscious mind? Because what's in my subconscious mind is going to control my destiny. Now, many people will say that can't be true, but I'll show you. I mean, there are other studies where instead of looking at what's happening inside the brain, we also look at how you accommodate these decisions, these choices that you think you've made. One such study, we show you the face of an individual, and subliminally we flash a label, angry or nasty on one face, pleasant, charismatic, generous maybe on another face. Now, once we've given you this limited exposure, maybe three or four times as we show you these faces, we flash these words, then we introduce you to people that correspond, or we ask you to make judgments of the photographs. Who do you like? Who do you favor? And what we hear is, of course, the judgments first are made according to the labels. Well, I like this person. Well, this person, and I not as much. And when we ask you then why, you'll make up a reason. Oh, they remind me of my uncle, or I don't know, I met someone like that once. But the important point is this. You will make up a reason. It's important to each of us that we think we're in control. So irrespective of the way we make presentations, providing stimuli that you're unaware of, that we know predisposes your decision, and then asking you to explain why you made those decisions, we know you will make up a reason every time. So you take a person, the average person, and they have done things that they might ask themselves, why did I do that? You know, I don't understand why I did
that. No.
Yeah. Especially people that have a self-sabotaging side to themselves, and that's definitely not you. But when that happens, when that's going on in somebody's life, it's because there is conflict in the unconscious, if you will, or disagreement, a lack of congruency between what's inside, what I believe, truly believe inside, that's in my subconscious mind, and what I'm saying in my conscious mind that I want to do, that I want to be, or how I want to behave, and so forth. So, Rita, free will. If we have free will, it is in cortical inhibition. You know, the one of my great teachers was Professor Carl Lepresch. And Carl Lepresch said, it drove into me, wherever you see great abundance in nature, pay close attention. When we look at the brain, the largest area of the brain, actual material of the brain, I'm not talking about water or fat, actual material, is cortex. If you look at the purpose or the function, the highest function of the cortex, it's inhibition. What we have the ability as human beings to do that's unique among us against the rest of the animal kingdom is cortically inhibit reactions, instincts, etc. So if I'm going to have these thoughts and they're non-productive, I need to have some mechanism there that catches that quickly so that I can inhibit it. Otherwise, I have about a third of a second in which I can genuinely make a free will choice. You know, Krishnamurti said this, and we just add a little of philosophy to our conundrum. He said, to choose presupposes I'm confused, because do I do this or do I do that? That's the basis of a choice. But do I do this or do I do that means or arises out of confusion. When I know clearly what it is that should be done, there is no choice to make. And that again becomes, your real choice is in what you put in your mind, what you choose to allow to be that script that comes out of that subconscious that propels itself into conscious, that gives rise to our actions, our behavior, our speech, and so forth.
But then how does external stimuli affect that part of us? You know, how does it make that choice for us?
Well, that's, you know, I love this analogy. We're still on the first half of the book, and before we get done with the show, we'll go to the back half where all the really
We got 2 hours, Eldon. We got
Yeah, you're right. Okay. You're right. So what happens is, let me back up a little bit and stage this one too. The average young person today, by the time they have reached the age of 18, has seen 200,000 hours of television and over 30,000 homicides. Now, we look at this and we realize that what happens with the media is its purpose is to entertain us, but in order for it to entertain, it has to arouse us in some way, shape, or form. So we have a threshold of arousal, and as human beings, we seek arousal. That's why there are roller coasters, that's why there are scary movies, and that's why people go to these things and do these things. Arousal is akin to fun. So, understanding that, the media comes at us with a level of stimulus designed to give rise to a reaction, an arousal reaction. As time passes on, the stimulus must increase. If we look at Marilyn Monroe's skirt being blown up as she passes over a vent in the ground, circa mid-50s, to what you see on primetime television today, to say nothing of what's available on the internet or some of these adult medias, etc., just primetime television, this argument for how the stimuli has been increased systematically, grown more intense, is quite plain, quite clear. The same is also true where violence is concerned. The kind of violence you might have seen in the 50s, where you had an Audie Murphy with a six gun on his hip shoot somebody and they threw their arms in the head and fell down, in the air, I should say, and fell down, quite different than what we see today where body parts fly and spew themselves on walls.
Well, you even see body parts on the news now.
I know.
Blood on the news, okay. Which is like, and they don't even do a viewer discretion is advised anymore.
No, they don't. You know, and you can catch one of these news stations and, I mean, you can hear things that you just have to have the remote control in your hand if you have small children around to shut down, to turn off. But assume, as most people do, that they don't do what you and I are talking about. They're just there. They're in front of this television. Their children are in front of this television. They're spending this amount of time. Now, the reason I go to television first, because it's not the only one, is because of the 200,000 hours. That's an incredible amount of time to be spent in front of that media, saturating this information. Now, out of this media, what do we get? Well, back in the 50s, researchers looking at 60s, I should say, this was actually the early 60s, 61, 62, looking at how we could sell product to you on television, connected a number of people to EEGs and monitored their brainwave activity. Since then, many replications with the best of equipment, we know this. The average adult will not stay in beta consciousness 3 minutes, even when motivated by a reward, say a cash reward, when in front of the television.
So what does that mean?
Beta consciousness is our ordinary state of consciousness. You're aware, you're awake, you can make decisions, da-da-da-da-da. What happens is people go into alpha. Alpha is that 8 to 14 cycles per second. I have testified in a court of law as an expert on hypnosis. Hypnosis is a alpha state, typically 8 to 14 cycles per second of brainwave activity. What is hypnosis? What is alpha? A state of hypersuggestibility. Okay? So now let's imagine you're sitting in front of your television, you just went to alpha, and here's a commercial and it says a Gombu's coming to town. And everybody's going to get it. But I'll tell you what, if you get into the local grocery store, we have got ABC, and you're going to feel a lot better, and here are pictures of you in a supine position being waited on by the opposite sex, and they look like Greek gods or goddesses, and that is going into your mind while you're in this altered state of consciousness. Now, do you think that's selling you sickness? Let me tell you. It absolutely is, and here's a recent one that the data just is so clear, no one questions it. Restless leg syndrome. You remember all the commercials that were on television, Rita, just a year and a half ago about restless leg syndrome?
Yeah, and you can get some kind of prescription, talk to your doctor, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. What happened is the commercial came to television. The incident of restless leg syndrome went through the roof. If you were to chart it, you got a straight line, okay? Coming from nowhere to the top of the chart, okay? Now, the drug manufacturer lost the patent and pulled the television commercials. You got a straight line down. Restless leg syndrome disappears, okay? All right.
That's
imagine
interesting.
That,
you know, that's interesting. I like the straight line down.
Yeah.
Part. You know, I can understand the up, you know, from a, you know, people have this issue going on and, you know, now somebody's identified and come up with a solution. So I can understand where people would get on board. I think it's interesting that the commercial gets pulled and it miraculously goes away.
Yeah. See, we know, I mean, there have been many instances where individuals, and I go through a number of them in the book, where individuals create a kind of mass hysteria. If your symptoms are general enough, And you and I could, we could invent symptoms. You know, you ever have, a little bit of soreness in your throat, maybe like your sinuses have been draining, you get up and your eyes are a little red, and it's one of those Visine moments, and you have a few aches, and you see, you just get some general symptoms. You can get everybody to fit to it. And if you tell them that it's a condition, and you have a cure for it, well, they're all going to come to you, okay? But the minute you take that away, like with restless leg syndrome, the minute you take that away, it's not there long enough to be a part of the consciousness of everyone. And so what happens is the awareness of it falls back to where it was before, zero. How many people had ever heard of restless leg syndrome before the television commercial?
Nobody. Well, it's right up there with, like, you know, the one that I remember is halitosis, you know, and people were going around going, it's a TV disease.
Right. So, but to culminate this thought, think of it this way. You go to your hypnotherapist, okay? He puts you into a trance. He, she puts you into a trance. In the trance, that hypnotherapist, because you're an alpha, says to you, now you're going to get sick. And when you do, you come right back here because I've got the cure for you. Just bring me another $150 and I'll take care of it. We would think of that as being criminal, licentious, deceptive, and a lot of other things, would we not?
Mm-hmm.
But we voluntarily plug ourselves into that television every night. And it tells us what our mood should be. We create our bumper stickers from it. We even practice it. You know, go. How many times have you seen "Go ahead and make my day" or heard that? Or "I don't get even, I get evener." Or all these notions that are angry, nasty, hostile. They do anything but promote health, happiness, and well-being. Now, why would that get sold to you? Because it builds within you anxiety. And if we can make you anxious, then we can give you a cure. And you will seek the cure. And if we don't make you anxious, we're not going to entertain you because we have not aroused you. So that becomes a major plot or ploy, if you will, in all of the entertainment and in all of this advertising. Now, over time, as we systematically desensitize this threshold of arousal, we actually end up taking our children and practicing them as killers. We give them video games and arcades where, you know, they're the shooter and they're shooting anybody and everybody. And they grow up as the shooter, as the killer, as the, you know. It's no wonder that we have young people that walk to school grounds with weapons they have never shot, shoot six times and not miss once. Because they've been shooting weapons in arcades since they were big enough to hold them. And our society just seems to, oh, well.
Well, and when you sit there and try to extract your child from that environment, it's like they're bored. You know, it's like, you know, you think about having, you know, kids today watch the Brady Bunch. They'd be like, la, 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 boring, 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 boring. Because they're not getting that excitement level. They're not getting that fix.
Well, that too is part of the problem. And again, it comes back to we are all going to make a choice. If we're parents, we're making it with our children. And the choice we make with our children, that's going to be a choice that propels on through our grandchildren, great-grandchildren, etc. But this is what it comes down to. If you're going to allow them to do that, you're going to have to balance it somehow, period of end of quotation. It amazes parents that, and it shouldn't, young children take everything to be literal. I mean, you can hide from them behind a pillow or a sack, and to them you have really disappeared. That is magic. They don't understand that poking your head out from behind the wall and then going back behind the wall is playing with a wall. They just see you as appearing and disappearing. Since the development of the brain is in this way, it tends to create a scenario that we'll take a young person and put them in front of a computer or a television set, and they believe that what they see is real. So if they see a homicide, it's real. Young people may tell you that, well, I got to a point where I thought they were paying people to die before I ever believed that it was an actor. I thought they just paid you to die. So you went out there and they shot you and that was it. That was the end of it, okay? Now, in lots of interviews, we get this out of people, young people, too, children. It's not uncommon to sit down with a 10, 11-year-old today and say, you know, how many pets have you got? And have them say, oh, I've got three. You know, I've got a dog and a cat at home, and I have my pony on RuneScape. Now, RuneScape is one of these multiplayer interactives that you're, you know, you get on with a computer, and there you have an alter ego, and you go on quests, and you acquire, you know, everything that you might acquire in real life if you lived in that time, swords and armor and horses and houses and da-da-da. The point is, the child has lost the ability to discriminate between that which is in the virtual world and that which is in the real world. The end result of this is not only have we desensitized this level of arousal, but we have desensitized in a very real sense the morality that is attached to things like the value of life. In doing that, in taking them and creating these synthetic virtual environments, we're also robbing them of the physical experiences that you and I had as young people. And that process is furthering the alienation, the self-alienation.
Well, I know.
So it's our choice.
I remember when my kids were young, and I'd send them outside, my stepkids, and I would send them outside in the summer. It's like, go out and play. Turn off the TV. Turn off the computers. It is a no electronics day. So if you plug it in, it has a battery, you can't play with it. Go outside and play.
Cool.
And about a half hour later, I'd go out and they'd both be sitting on the front stoop. And I'm like, what are you doing? Well, we don't know what to do. Well, none of our friends are out here. And they would just sit there and look pitiful. It's like, well, you can come in, but it's a no electronics day, so if you want to read a book, you want to play a game with each other, I don't care. You know, just no electronics. And you've never seen such long vases.
No, I know.
Because they don't know how to play. They don't know how to go out and climb a tree or play tag or hopscotch.
That's exactly what I was
going to
say. You know, that's exactly what I was going to say. The whole art of play, which is absolutely important to the health and the longevity of a human, you know, to the joy of a human, is becoming lost to this virtual environment. So you can take them as you did. You put them outside. You know, I talk to young people. I've got a 10-year-old son that keeps me in that environment, and he's just a joy in my life. He's my youngest, and I've got him stretched all the way to in their 30s. But my 10-year-old and I play baseball and do things like that to get him away from this, because there's a lot of peer pressure. But I can say to him, you know, have you ever played hopscotch, Bill? What's hopscotch, Dad? Well, you know, I mean, it's kind of a girl's thing when I was growing up, but it's kind of fun. Let me show you, you know. They don't know what it is. Unfortunately, a lot of these kinds of things aren't taught in our educational system anymore as well. So unless you get the child actually involved in an organized sport, having free time outside where, you know, you and I might have been thrilled to do that as opposed to chores, clean my room and the bathroom and do the dishes or something, they're absolutely bored. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I remember growing up, it's like we were never in the house, ever. You know, I lived on a dead-end street, and so it was just this one little block, and the end of the dead-end street actually dumped into a parking lot for a Chinese restaurant that was around the corner, and that was our playground, and we rode our bikes up and down the street, and we played tag up and down the street, and we played hide-and-seek, and, you know, and every kid in the neighborhood that lived in our little neighborhood came out and played. Boom.
Yeah.
That's what we did every day.
That's what I did too, and that's how our society was, you know, that's where we come from as a nation, period. Where we're going as a nation right now seems to scare everybody, and I think it should. And for all intent and purposes, it comes back to how we use this. It isn't that television is bad, because it's not. It's a marvelous media. If we choose selectively what it is that we want to put into our mind, that's the whole point. Who's choosing what I put into my mind? Because if what I'm putting into my mind is all the negativity, it's the violence, it's the anger, it's the okay to get even stuff, if it's all that, what it's going to do is effectively poison me. It's effectively going to interrupt with the optimal operation of my endocrine, my immune, and my autonomic nervous system. It's going to build cortisol. In the end, what I'm saying is, if you want to live long, you want to be happy, you want to be healthy, you want to control that information you put into your mind. If you truly want to be self-empowered, you need to be in charge of what the subconscious, the unconscious, is going to tell the conscious mind to do. Otherwise, you're going to be in 20/20 hindsight a good deal of your life. Why did I do that? Why did I say that? How did I get here again? Why is it I always end up here? Why is it nothing ever works for me? I did everything that everybody told me to do. I wrote affirmations. I did my vision board. Why am I always sick? Why do I always... And we all hear this, okay? That's the life you're going to live if you don't change the content in your mind.
You know, and we're going to hit a break here. You know, one of the things that I think is unforgivable is the programming or the commercials that they play for children, you know, saying that Hot Pockets is a good balanced meal, because when they get to be teenagers, they assume that Hot Pockets are a good and nutritious meal, which, as you and I both know, is a big fat lie.
As far as I'm concerned, that is a real pet of mine. Going after children, I think, ought to be illegal. And a lot of people don't know this. Maybe we'll take it up after the commercial. But subliminal advertising is not illegal. Remind me to tell you about M&M's new commercial,
okay,
aimed at kids.
Let's come back to that after the break. I'm Dr. Rita Louise. This is Just Energy Radio. We're talking to Eldon Taylor about his new book, Mind Programming. His website is EldonTaylor.com, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise, will return right after these messages.
Deep inside yourself and venture into the realm of the unconscious mind with my Meditating on the Kabbalah guided imagery audio CDs. Discover who you are and what you want in life. Meditating on the Kabbalah can help you to open, clear, and revitalize the energetic pathways of your subtle being. They will support you in your spiritual quest by helping you to access the profound insights and inner guidance you need as you work in alignment with your highest good. Let them help you to release negative thoughts and emotions and clear away any limitations that may be keeping you from experiencing your full potential. Walk down the path to health, healing, understanding, and enlightenment with Meditating on the Kabbalah. Order your copy today at www.soulhealer.com. That's right, that's www.soulhealer.com. Balance in all things is critical to maintaining health. In the hectic drive of today's world, many of us forget to take care of our most important asset, ourselves. At productsforthesoul.com, we want to support your effort to nurture yourself. We offer a wide variety of herbs, supplements, and high-quality, ready-to-eat, all-natural foods. We even have guilt-free chocolates. Best of all, our products are delivered straight to your door. It's time to start loving yourself. Visit productsforthesoul.com and start loving yourself today. You can get a copy of Dr. Rita's latest book, Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4, by visiting www.soulhealer.com. Get your copy today.
And now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Oops. You know, I just love being my own technician because I just like touch buttons and it's like, oh yeah, I stopped my own music. Anyway, welcome back to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise, and we're talking to Eldon Taylor about his new book, Mind Programming. If you're enjoying the programming today, please mark this show as a favorite. So, Eldon, before we went to break... I'm sorry, I make myself laugh sometimes.
That's all right.
We went to break, we were talking about advertising to children, and you brought up M&Ms.
M&Ms. Or I thought maybe you'd gone and looked at the M&M commercial, and that's why you were laughing.
Well, a friend of mine calls them WW for all the dyslexic people in the world.
Okay. Well, we could take that one on. But what I was really saying, and it's a bit of a protest, obviously, is the way things are sold to children today should be illegal. M&M's has a brand new commercial out, and in this commercial, we have an M&M come out of the sea, and this M&M has got high eyebrows and sexy eyes and long arms and long legs, and is in
it's
high
the green
heels.
M&M.
That's right.
Yeah.
You've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What you have to ask? Why all the sexual content in an M&M's ad aimed at children 12 and under? Why?
Mm.
I mean, you don't think that's a coincidence, do you?
Well, you know, I've never really thought about it. You know, now that you're bringing it up, well, there's my own, all right, I'm just going to say this, you know, like there is the subculture rumor that, you know, green M&Ms are aphrodisiacs, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and actually, that was kind of my thought, was that they heard that little rumor thing that green M&Ms were aphrodisiacs, ha ha ha, and that's when the green girl M&M came out.
It's probably
the other way
around.
Maybe they started that rumor.
It may be. I'm sure it wasn't by accident, but the bottom line is that commercial is aimed at our children. Look at when it airs. You don't catch that, you know, in primetime television. It's airing in cartoons, and it's not aimed at you and I as adults. It's aimed at a much younger generation. But it is, this stuff is not accidental. Look at Quiznos' new commercial, the torpedo commercial. I mean, when you look at that, this is a failure. That's pure and simple. That's, you know, sex sells, and it's being shoved at our children at a younger and younger age. The subliminal content that we find in everything today, political campaigns, advertising, music, it proliferates everywhere. Most people think, you know, they can't do that. That's against the law. But that's false to fact. There is no law that protects you from subliminal advertising in this country. There is an FCC codification that essentially says, you know, you shouldn't do this. It's the FCC 74-78 broadcast of information requirement. But there's no penalty attached to it. So when Bush ran his infamous rats ad, painting rats over the top of Gore's head, and everyone discovered it, and it became well known, and ultimately the Republicans admitted that it was a planned, deliberate attempt, and the entire Democratic Party power, if you will, went after it, the FCC was powerless to penalize anybody. You see?
Because it's not illegal.
Technically what the FCC can do is pull a station's license if they know that the station knew and did this intentionally. But it, an advertiser does it. There's nothing they can do to the advertiser. And, of course, the stations are going, I didn't know it was there. I mean, a toy commercial in Denver, Colorado runs. Across the screen, slightly out of sync, are the words, "Tell Mom by now." The audience sees it because it's out of sync. The television station denies having any knowledge of it. The toy store, the seller, denies having any knowledge of it. The manufacturer denies having any knowledge of it. But who are you going to go after when they all deny and you have no codification, no way of investigating it because there isn't a crime that's been committed. You haven't broken any law.
And so when you're talking about subliminal advertising, I mean, I think, well, you know, people from my generation remember, you know, where there is the whole big thing about, you know, at the, like the drive-in movie theater saying, you know, eat more popcorn or, you know,
right.
get a soda kind of put into the movie. But
the
we're not even talking about that kind of primitive level of sophistication.
It's a lot more sophisticated than it was back in the 50s when James Vickery claimed to have done that over the face of Kim Novak during the showing of the movie Picnic in the New Jersey Theater. Now, what we know about Vickery, just so that we get this one in its proper urban legend place, is that he later, in the congressional hearings of 1984, denied that he really did that. What he said was he did it to promote his business because his business was failing. We know that pre-conscious processing, the industry itself, the business that he had, owned patents to technology that would do it. So the bottom line is we don't really know, did he do it, didn't he do it? You know, there are those that will say, well, he never did do that. But then on the other hand, there are those that will say, well, what would you tell Congress if they were aiming at you? We know that he did have the technology. This we know. There is no doubt but what subliminal information influences buying decisions. There's no doubt but what this information doesn't influence behavior. Indeed, the research on that is in-depth and overwhelming. In a work, I believe, well, I know it's by Robert Bornstein, I believe the title of it is Psychoanalytic Perspectives on Developmental Psychology, a meta-analysis of all of the research that's been done in this area, is compiled by Bornstein and others. And the meta-analysis is so robust, the data is so overwhelming, that for someone to claim there is no influence, no subliminal influence, they either have an agenda or they went to school too many years ago and have refused to stay apace with the literature. So
let's just take one little break here. I mean, because I think most people, when they think of advertising, you know, and the one that keeps running through my head, which is, I don't know if you have Jack in the Box where you live anymore.
Sure.
We do in Texas. You know, is the Mini Buffalo Ranch Chicken Sandwich. You know, which made me want to go buy it because I thought the commercial was so cute. You know, but that's the external commercial. When you're talking about subliminal advertising, can you kind of just refresh everybody's memory or kind of, you know, give a definition of what that really means?
Sure. And I'm going to qualify that definition because when you look at it, we're really looking at maybe three different levels. The first level is, of course, what we think of as a supraliminal. And that's where maybe we have a beautiful woman and she's inside a convertible and the entire commercial is about, you know, making you think that you might have a place next to this beautiful woman if you bought this car. It's the association. You see the movie, there's a Macintosh computer in it, and it's being used by somebody who's drinking a Coca-Cola, they're smoking a Cuban cigar, that kind of association. And in some areas, in some countries, that's illegal because we know that conveys an image that has a subliminal effect, okay? Then there's a second kind, and this kind is a lot more subtle. It's a kind that your perceptual defense mechanisms don't allow you to see it. We see this typically maybe in a brushed piece of artwork. I show several of them in my book, Mind Programming. But here,
I have to tell you, Eldon, when I was reading that section, I was shocked.
Most people are. I apologize, as you know, for the graphic content. But if you don't put it there and you don't show it, as you know, what I did is I actually showed one of the training manuals for a major advertising agency and actual ads that they had laid out and how they laid it out and how they intentionally put this material in it. But
there was the material, you know, and I think the part that shocked me the most, and for people that are listening, it was really interesting in the book, was that was what they were teaching their students or employees or whoever these people were to do.
Yes,
and I think that was the part that shocked me the most.
And a lot of what they're teaching, I have a psychologist friend over not far from here, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, who, when he first read this, because I shared it with him, I sent him a copy of the actual manual when it was sent to me, he read it and he said, "Do you understand all this? I mean, these guys are psychologists." He is a psychologist, okay? I mean, they really are sophisticated about how they go about doing this. There is, as you now know, there is a motive behind every single thing that appears in that ad or those ads. And they're all designed to elicit a response in somebody along some scale or another. But where I was is these things can be airbrushed in. So let's take an example. I'll try and create an audio example. One of the pictures, illustrations that you will find in Mind Programming is of a very famous bourbon ad. And this ad has a woman putting a glass of bourbon to her mouth. And right at the edge of the glass, about to go into her mouth, carefully airbrushed, and obviously there, once you have seen it, is a penis. Now, the entire ad is full of sex embeds, sex images. But because our perceptual mechanisms do not expect to see that, because that is so taboo, it's actually blocked. We don't see it until it's pointed out. Once it's pointed out, it is so obvious that we cannot help but see it. And that's true with most of the things that are in it. All right. Now, that would be the second kind of subliminal.
And can I just make a comment to it?
Please.
I mean, I think everybody has, you know, when you go to the dentist, there's, High and Low magazine, a little book that they have for kids, and there's the find an image picture, you know, look for the boat, and it's kind of in the wall and the wood paneling, and look for the rabbit, and it's, you know, in the tree, part of the branches. And so unless you're really looking for it, you don't see it.
That's right.
At all.
That's absolutely right. And then the third form is, of course, we're going to mask information technically. We're going to use technology to mask it in a way that you can't see it unless you use technology to find it. And that might be by, I'm going to have a slide insertion like Alfred Hitchcock did in his movie Psycho, where the one in 30 frames may have a word or may have a color image, may have a knife, and its design, it comes by so fast that I consciously don't see it, but I do recognize it unconsciously. So that kind of masking, the tachetoscope, the 1 in 30 slides, the masking that might be done by candle-watt differences. We've all, for example, taken a flashlight, shined it on a wall with a light on, and we're unable to see where the flashlight is. We shut the wall off, or where it's the light that's shining from it is. We shut the light off in the room, and it becomes very clear where we're shining it. Working with candle-watt differences, years and years ago, I might give a lecture to a group of people, and put a number up behind me all the time I was lecturing. And then I would have a sheet that I would pass out to everybody in the audience, and it would have numbers 1 to 100 on it. And I would ask people to circle the number. The vast majority, and usually it ran far over 80%, once I remember it being in the high 90s, would choose the number that was behind me, and I'd alternate this number, might be 5 one time, might be 13 the next time I did this. They would choose the number that they had been looking at all the time that was right behind me on a white screen, but was there under candlewatt difference like the flashlight in a lit room. So that is the technology. Now, what Bush did with the rats ad that I talked about was they blew up the rats in Democrats, and that appeared as a frame in 30 frames going across the section where the Democrat sign was behind Gore as they talked about Gore's position on government. Now, an interesting aside on this is there was actually a study carried out to see if that could have had any effect on the election. If you remember, that was a very, very close election. And if you remember, Al Gore didn't
yet another carry, conspiracy theory.
Yeah, he didn't carry his own state of Tennessee. Well, you know, to test that, to see if indeed it was possible, a study was designed, carried out in New York, where a group of volunteers were shown to two candidates, were told somewhat similar stories, but these candidates were, of course, not real candidates. They were, made-up candidates. And this same kind of technology, the same kind of influence was placed over one. The result was that particular study showed clearly an influence over our mock election that took place in the study. Now, if you think about the close states and the states where this commercial ran, including Tennessee, there are a number of researchers that are just flat on the record saying, you know, the bottom line is it probably did influence the outcome of an election. It may surprise you, but headlines have appeared in places like Georgia where they're afraid that there will be the use of subliminal information in those elections unfairly influencing the outcome. And my office, myself, I have spoken to individuals representing people that have had great deal of success in foreign countries that wanted to use subliminal. In our instance, we told the party we didn't think that was a good idea unless they were to inform everybody that they were doing it and they were to use it as something like, let's get out the vote. Voter turnout worked to their advantage. Then they might get some extra publicity out of it. They decided they didn't want to do that. They went away. They didn't use us, but they did win the election.
You know, we're sitting here talking about all of this, you know, and it's about selling more stuff, you know, somebody making a profit, somebody getting their way. And it just seems so unethical. Just in the big sense of the word.
I couldn't concur with you more. You know, the marvelous thing about our society is it is a capitalistic free enterprise. And the entrepreneur can go off and create a radio show like you have or go out and do free research unfettered by the reins of grants, et cetera, like I might do. But at the same time, as far as I'm concerned, there's a great responsibility inherent in that. And that responsibility is not being lived up to. And so it's incumbent upon every individual to understand that this is the technology, this is what's being done, this is how and where you have taken aboard so much of what your personal beliefs are, whether they're political or they're religious. I mean, for most of us, what we believe we have inherited in much the same way that we inherited the language we speak. It has come out of our culture, out of our enculturation, and our choices are very limited as a result. And then we say, you know, well, I'm going to go out here and I'm going to take a self-help course, or I'm going to do some personal improvement. And we do that not knowing who we were or who we are. And in that process, we're never successful. So what I wanted to do with the first half of mind programming was to expose this, to bare the bones, not to do it like conspiracy, but to say, okay, here are the facts. I'm going to let you make up your mind. Here's an actual training manual from an advertising agency. These are actual ads. This is what they say about it. This is what they told their people is why they did everything. You tell me, you know? Okay, look, are you familiar? Do you know about this case? This is declassified material, the CIA agency, these studies that were run, these special clandestine operations. I'm just going to tell you about them, and I'm going to tell you where you can find more information about them, and I'm going to give you all the sites. What I tried to do systematically in the first half of the book was say, this is the case, as though I were presenting a case to a court, a jury. You're the jury, you're the reader, you decide. You know, these are the facts. You decide if there's a conspiracy. Myself, if there's a conspiracy, it's profit. It's not a lot of people sitting around a table and saying to themselves, you know, all the Fortune 500 companies, all right, let's gang up on the consumer. That isn't what happens. It's all about profit, all about power. So what people do is they find ways that they can influence. The latest, greatest saying over that is, win the hearts and minds of the people. Okay? That kind of propaganda we saw in the Bush administration in what were known as VNRs, video news releases. We see it today, and we have seen it for years by political organizations designed to convince America of a given path or a given politician. We see it not just in the power, but we see it now over in the purse when it comes to all of the things that we're sold, from the food that we consume to the ideas that we hold dear, to the movies that we share and talk about around the water cooler at our workplace. Our lives are owned by those who are intent on doing so for profit or power.
Well, and it's just scary because a lot of the stuff that they want the profit or power about, well, I mean, all right, the profit part isn't necessarily good for us.
No, it's here's a great one. I love this one, okay? Look. The government has placed the Surgeon General's warning on cigarette packs. And all of that is designed to do what? Dissuade people, of course, from smoking. So what would you think if you were to discover that the government knows, that researchers know, that when you show that warning to a smoker, a pronounced response in the smoker's nucleus accumbens, the area of the brain that's involved with reward, craving, and addiction, is visible when we are looking at that using enhanced magnetic resonance imaging. In other words, look, that Surgeon General's warning does what? It causes a smoker to want to smoke more.
Well, then let me ask this question, because it's, you know, when they do the, you know, this show might have, you know, adult content, viewer discretion is advised. Does it do the same kind of thing?
Of course. I mean, did you ever put up a don't touch wet paint sign?
Yeah, everybody touches it.
Okay. I mean, sure. You know, and sometimes, you know, maybe that's innocent. But generally, when you're looking at the big dollars that are involved in media advertising today, there's nothing innocent about it. It's all planned out to the very finest detail. So,
well, I mean, with like computer games that kids would be interested in, like we had, in our house, we had this big go-around about Vice City, which was a rated M nasty. It was about Las Vegas. It was a nasty game. And we told our kids they couldn't play it. Well, I'll tell you what, they went around and around to all their friends' houses that had it so that they could play it.
Well.
You know what I mean? Because it was.
I do. I absolutely do. You know, one of the things that I was involved in was the Judas Priest case. And
you were personally involved in
that? I was one of the witnesses. That's correct.
Ooh, you're famous.
No. This was a case about two young men who had listened to the Stained Glass album by Judas Priest, a particular song, over and over, and Better By You, Better Than Me. And this song encouraged suicide. We discovered in the lyrics of this song a subliminal command, do it, do it. Well, two young men took dad's shotgun, went to the local schoolyard, churchyard, actually, playground behind a church and school. And one of them braced his shotgun, blew his, you know, killed himself. The other one didn't brace his shotgun and blew the front of his face off. And he lived for 3 years thereafter, where we obtained a lot of additional information. But the bottom line was, the subliminal was demonstrated to be there to the court's satisfaction. The judge ruled it was absolutely there. The Judas Priest group admitted that they had put subliminal information on their albums in the past, but just not on this one. CBS could not find the original 24-track master. So it wasn't possible to ascertain if it was intentional or not, and they argued that it was a coincidence of sound. In a wrongful death action, you have to show intent. Intent couldn't be shown. So what we had was a young man that survived the shooting, and I tell this story in Mind Programming, survived the shooting, who then told CBS during their interrogatories through his school counselor that they had listened to this over and over. They'd looked at each other and said, let's do it. They went to the playground and chanted, do it, do it, do it. They put the shotguns up and did it. Okay? But the do it subliminal that was a coincidence of sound was not put there intentionally, and of course, therefore, you know, really couldn't have been the causal agency behind these two boys who chanted do it and killed themselves. Could it? Well, here's the irony to this story. While that trial was going on, and jokes, et cetera, were appearing on CBS daily, and CBS, by the way, was fined the maximum under Nevada law several times for impeding the discovery process or manipulating the media with a major press campaign. But while that was going on, the Stained Glass album sold like rockets. Mm-hmm. So if you want to tell people, you know, don't do this, you're most assured that they probably will.
Well, I mean, it's like websites that they say, you know, has something going on, and the next thing you know, it gets millions and millions of hits. Eldon, our last break. We will be back. We're talking to Eldon Taylor, author of Mind Programming, and we will be back after these words from our sponsors.
Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise, will return right after these messages. Hi, I'm James Othayanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. Listen to Dr. Rita's Soul Healer Moment live each third Sunday night of the month on Feet to the Fire. www.feet2fire.com for more information.
You can get a copy of Dr. Rita's latest book, Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4, by visiting www.soulhealer.com. Get your copy today. How would you like to live long and enjoy great health? How about creating solid bones and whiter teeth, strengthen your heart and eyes, and have radiant, youthful-looking skin? There is an ancient health and longevity secret that has been used for millennia in Egypt, India, and China that can help you achieve this. For the first time in the modern world, Pearlseum brings ancient wellness secrets to you. For more information about Pearlseum, visit www.ancientpearl.com. Are you sensitive to energy? Want to explore the world beyond the five senses? Looking for a new career as an alternative healthcare practitioner? Then the Institute of Applied Energetics, Medical Intuition, and Energy Medicine Training Programs may be right for you. Our comprehensive curriculum provides students with a deep understanding of how to detect, evaluate, and transform the subtle body, as well as techniques for correcting energetic imbalances that may underscore a person's ability to experience radiant health. So if you are sensitive to energy, contact the Institute of Applied Energetics right away. Be a catalyst for changing the way healthcare is done around the world. Visit www.appliedenergeticsinstitute.com and start your new career today.
And now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Welcome back to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise, and we're talking to Eldon Taylor about his new book, Mind Programming. His website is www.eldontaylor.com. So, Eldon, you know, we've spent all this time talking about the dark side. So why don't we talk about how something like subliminal programming or subliminal messages can actually be used in a positive and healing light? Oops, and I guess if I unmuted your mic, you could even answer me.
So I'm muted or I'm not?
No, you're back with me.
I'm back.
I'm like, you're back. Well, you know, I didn't turn the music off this time, so, you know, I'm half good.
You're doing fine, you know. People don't understand how much there is to being a radio host when you get all that technology in front of you and you get, you know, the show going, and it's really easy to just push the wrong button, isn't it?
Well, and I'm just having so much fun with you today, and this topic is fascinating, and I know that we're just like cracking the surface of it because you cover so much more in your book, you know, and so, yeah, I'm a little, you know, I'm into the show. I'm not into buttons.
Well, that's good. I like that. That's great. That's a good compliment. So now my mic isn't muted. I can answer your question.
That's right. So let's get away from the dark side. You know, I never knew you had that kind of a dark side.
Well, hopefully, you know, I've left that dark side a long time ago. But you remember I mentioned when I was back in the world of criminalistics, going up to the Utah State Prison and actually running a couple of studies out there. Mm-hmm. That was a major change in my life. And that's where I first really began to look at the use of these technologies in a life-enhancing way. And it's, you know, how can you use this technology to empower an individual? At the Utah State Prison, just by way of background, a friend of mine had asked me if we couldn't employ a technology I was using in the lie detection arena to assist and facilitate inmates in lowering hostility and aggression. Now, what I had done, I had heard that the Los Angeles Police Academy, who was preparing for the Olympic Games then in L.A., had secured a technology, and they had created a script to use this technology in case there was a terrorist abduction. And the entire idea was they would play it over the telephone, because out of every 24-hour period in terrorist abductions, there's typically 17 hours spent in negotiating over the phone. They'd play it across the telephone, and it would have the appearance of being the sound of a heating or air conditioner going on in the background, but it would contain subliminal messages, and these messages were designed to cause dehydration, and whoever listened to it, the scenario was designed such that purportedly they would suggest that the abductors were in a contaminated area. They needed to be moved from that area. If they were to see any symptoms of A, B, or C, be certain, because this was a very dangerous disease. Now, according to the story, they tried it out on their cadet academy, and they terminated the program after 3 days. It was designed to go 5 days because they had just dehydrated too many cadets. I immediately went after trying to verify this story. I was never able to verify it, nor would anybody ever deny it. And in all these years since then, it still goes undenied. Okay? So whether they had it or they didn't, I don't really know. But this I did know. I thought from that story, that source, if you could create a subliminal audio message that would dehydrate cadets, I could use that to create a program that would have people tell me the truth. So when they came in to a lie detection test, because about 20% of lie detection tests are what we call inconclusives, which just simply means you cannot say they're telling you the truth or they're practicing deception. And that could be due to a couple of reasons, countermeasures, being employed by a dishonest person, or situational stress by an honest person. They're just afraid you're gonna call them a liar, you're going to point at them. So if we could just do away with a situation or with situational stress with this 20% of inconclusives, well, you know, hey, that would make my job just so much easier. So how could I go about creating a program that would exaggerate the responses of those intent on telling me a lie, practicing deception, and would relax those coming in to tell me the truth? Now, the long story short, Rita, I went out and contacted anybody and everybody that had anything to do with audio subliminal, this, that, or the other. And you would have thought I was asking for the secret to Coca-Cola. The bottom line was, you know, to me, if a scientist says, I studied this and this works, and I ask you, well, what is this? You have an obligation to tell me what it is. I mean, how can anybody replicate it if you don't, right?
Right.
Nobody would tell me. So I bought up a bunch of shelf product, went to the store, the bookstores, and bought every program I could find. And I sent it to a friend of mine in Los Angeles, Anthony Pelicano, who had audio forensic laboratories. Now, Anthony was sought by everybody because he had the state-of-art equipment. And what he specialized in doing, let's assume that you were a detective, you were undercover, and you're recording a deal just as it's about to go down, as the suspect is about to say the most damaging of things, a jackhammer on the street goes off, and what you hear is a jackhammer on the recording. Well, what Anthony did and was so good at was he'd pull the jackhammer off so you had the content of what was said, and this would go into a court every day. So I sent all these programs to Anthony, and I said, Anthony, tell me what they're doing and how they're doing it. You know, what's on this program? Well, long and short of it, Pelicano and I had a conversation, and he said, you know, I'm sorry, Eldon, there's just nothing on these tapes. You know, maybe they have goodwill, but there is no content underneath this stuff that's recoverable.
They just prayed over them a lot, right?
Or something, yeah. I mean, one for what it's worth, one manufacturer did get in trouble, and indeed it was in the state of Texas for making some claims, and Texas asked him put up or shut up, which they should do, and he contacted my office, and he essentially, you know, asked me to step in because we were doing a lot of research on subliminal at the time. And I asked him how his programs were made. He had his engineer send me an engineer statement, and it said they were masked at 40 dB beneath the primary carrier. Well, the theoretical limitation to most ghetto blasters, stereos, players, is 30 to 40 dB. So if you mask at 40 dB beneath, that's like taking the violinist and sending him to New York while everybody else listens to the symphony in London. Okay? It's just not there. So at any rate, after going through all of this, I sat down, I read all the literature, and settled on a dichotic method of creating a program. We did. The program worked. That program today is called InnerTalk. It's a part of our patented technology that's been studied by a number of universities and, for that matter, governments, and found repeatedly effective. But here's the bottom line. I'm using this technology just in lie detection. It's working really, really well. In fact, and this is a serious, you know, you get paid by the hour and you never get a confession right away. Confessions, if you have a bad charter, maybe on average 5 hours out in interrogation. The program was working so well that these people were giving me confessions in the first 15, 20 minutes, and I wanted to say, now, wait, I get paid by the hour. Just hold it. But with that said, a friend of mine contacted me from the prison system and asked if it would assist there. We went out to the prison system. This was a real life-changing moment for me because I really was in the role of a criminalist. I was, you know, convinced that these guys in that prison system were there. We were warehousing them. They were just learning to be better criminals. When they came out, the sad part was they were going to live next door to you and date your daughter. I did not have a good attitude. But I sat down with these inmates after we did some sophisticated psychometric measurements and started talking and discovered a function that, to me, changed my career and is the most important thing I could communicate to anybody. This is way back, early 1980s. What we discovered from the inmates was a surprise was not high scores in self and social alienation. Everybody expected that. But that they displaced responsibility for what they did. And the way they did that kind of went along this line. You know, ah, but for the grace of God, there go you. You know, my daddy was an alcoholic. My mommy was a prostitute. The neighbor boy mainlined me when I was 12 years old. What would you do? Now, very often these stories were exaggerated. Most of the time they were exaggerated. But even when they were true, you could have two brothers from the same home, went through the same situation. One was a surgeon at a teaching college, and the other one was in the prison system for a heinous crime. What happened was everybody made their own choices, but as opposed to take responsibility for the choice, they blamed off that responsibility. It was due to. It was what they did was what the average reasonable person would do. You know, they were just getting even. They were just setting things right. They were just, you know, doing what they had to do. I mean, I heard sad, sad stories. I had a young man at my office once that had stolen an enormous amount of lumber, and it turned out that he'd stolen it to finish a room in the basement for their new baby that was coming because his wife felt that was the most important thing that they did was to have a room, a dedicated room. Well, you know, your heart goes out to some of these people when you hear these stories, but these choices that were being made were always the choice because of something else. In this young man's case, my employer doesn't pay me enough. It was his fault, not my fault, see. What we did to intervene with this, and it did end up actually lowering aggression, hostility, it tended to interrupt the recidivity rate. What we did is we went after changing these people, the way they talk to themselves, by utilizing this subliminal technology that, as I say today, we call InnerTalk. It's really not subliminal in the sense that you can't hear it because it's there, and you will hear voices. But back to the point here, it goes unregistered by the conscious mind. What we did is we took a group of inmates that volunteered. We divided them into three groups, ran a tight double-blind study. One group, our experimental group, got the subliminal program, the InnerTalk program, with messages, I forgive myself, I forgive all others, I am forgiven. Okay. Now, there were some other self-esteem issues, but everything was around the forgiveness. Because if you forgive, you can't blame. As long as you blame, you're effectively tied up. That's what most people don't understand. You have disempowered yourself. You've robbed yourself of your own franchise when you blame. If you blame, there's nothing you can do about it. The minute, however, you can't blame, the minute you've forgiven, you have cut that thread of blame, then it's up to you to do whatever needs to be done for that change. Now, when we talked about this, there was some resistance because there were people that said, well, now, wait a minute. If they forgive themselves, aren't they just going to go back and do it again? But the whole theory was, no, we don't believe so. If we can cut this ability that they have to blame and teach them self-responsibility, it will change this person. Well, the fact is, it did work. It worked so well that it was cloned throughout the entire prison system from minimum to max, cloned from there out to additional prison systems, male and female alike. What happens if when you change the way you talk to yourself, and that's what you're really doing, and that is the advantage to this kind of technology, is, well, if somebody says to you, Rita, not to you, because you know you're good, you know you're great, and you help a lot of people, but to most people, if you say you are good, there is an automatic mechanism that kind of says back, you know, maybe, what is it?
No, not really.
Are you angling for something? Yeah, or no, not really. When you really see it, and I do this one all the time, is you ask everybody, and you, next time you have a convention or you're teaching, raise their hand if they want to make $1 million this year. All hands go up, of course. Then you just simply say to yourself, meaningfully, because you know that you have to believe that you're going to make $1 million, that this year you're going to make $1 million. Excuse me. It takes only a second, and you start seeing smiles. And that's because they start getting back this inner talk that says, yeah, what are you going to do, rob a bank? But if you had Bill Gates in the room, he's not going to hesitate on a million. A million's not near enough. It is that easy to see the difference between what we want on the outside and what's going on the inside. So when somebody tells us something from the outside, we tend to be suspicious of it or reject it. If there are mechanisms in the unconscious that are defense mechanisms that have created strategies that are circular, like those that we find complicit in addiction or complicit in self-sabotage, complicit in destructive relationships, particularly abusive ones, and on and on and on. If there are those mechanisms, well, obviously the unconscious is going to reject this statement that would challenge the mechanism, because then the mechanism would be broke, and the mechanism is believed to be needed to protect your ego. So, when you prime the unconscious, the subconscious, utilizing this inner talk technology by talking to it directly, what happens is it becomes your talk, your self-talk. And you rely on your self-talk. What you gain is a congruency between what you're saying you want with the conscious mind and what's believed in the script in the unconscious mind. And it really is that simple. It's not magical, but it is simple in the sense that if you know what it is that you want, if you know that what's not working in your life, you can today use technologies to just access those changes.
Well, and one of the things about the book, and I'm just letting you know we have 10 minutes left, not quite 10. One of the things in the book is you provide an inner talk CD with the book. So people that buy the book can also gain access to this, an ability to change their inner programming as well.
That's right. And I've had, I can't tell you now, already hundreds of testimonials, letters come in, emails about that CD. It's a very powerful CD. I hope you've used yours. But in addition to the CD, the whole back half of the book is about the simple things you can do without ever spending a dime. You know, don't spend any money If you want to take control of your life, there are some real easy, simple ways. And if we only have 10 minutes, can I blister through a few of them?
You sure can. And I, but I want to make sure you have time to talk about if you're still running that promotion that you announced that to the listeners.
All right.
Again.
So I'll go real, real fast, and then we'll do
okay.
that. Thank you. The first thing, if you haven't already got this, turn off the media or change the content. You know, if you use that media, use it to put inspirational, educational kinds of ideas into your mind. You know, listen to Rita. Listen to her show. Do those kinds of things with media. The second one, intake as much positive information as you can, whether it's from books, audios, videos, movies. There's some great inspirational movies that are now out. If you're in front of your computer all the time, do yourself a favor. Jump over. Use a Google and find inspirational quotes or sayings. Or, you know, I have an iPhone and I download from the Gutenberg Library classic books like Pascal's Pensées, which I happen to be reading now. Put quality material into your mind. Think of your mind as it's a computer, and you're allowing anybody, if you don't control the input, to program your computer with the content that's going to come back out on your screen, your conscious language, your conscious action. Cancel self-defeating thoughts. You get a self-defeating thought comes in, one of those thoughts that says, you know, I just can't do this, or I'm afraid to do this, or I, you know, what I, two things. The first one is, say to yourself, cancel, cancel, cancel. You hear the gomboos coming to town. The simple, simple strategy of just simply saying, not for me, cancel that one, cancel that one, cancel.
Does
tells
that really
your
work?
Mind, it very definitely does. And, you know, we ran a little pilot study to see if it worked. And indeed, of the 12 people that were in the pilot study that utilized this simple thing, this simple phrase, and we had 12 people in two different groups, only one got the flu in the year that we did it. That would be 2 years ago now. In the other group, 9 of the 12 got the flu, okay? And all they were canceling was this notion that they were going, every time they had a thought that there was going to be a flu, there was going to be a sickness, or they saw it or heard it, like right now is a good time to be thinking that with everybody talking about the new flu season. Just cancel those thoughts. They're self-defeating. They don't serve you. Yeah. Use affirmations. Use some positive affirmations. Say positive things to yourself. You know, they are helpful. Meditate. You know, that's critically important. Be still and know. You're never going to know who you are if you don't shut down that talk that's always going on in your mind long enough to get in touch with yourself. Everyone nowadays, your cardiac care physician to your yoga instructor is going to tell you about the power of meditation. Take just 5 or 10 minutes. You don't have to be a deep transcendental meditation expert. Take 5 or 10 minutes to be still, to quiet your mind, to learn a little bit about yourself. Think about good memories. That's a big one. If you spend 20 minutes a day thinking about a positive memory, the research shows that you will add years to your life. You strengthen your immune and your endocrine system. You gain health. You know, a simple one that I've always loved is smile. Smile. The brain doesn't know the difference between you faking a smile and you genuinely smiling. When you smile, it releases endorphins, the body's natural opiate system. Makes you feel good. You know, all you have to do is say, okay, I'm not feeling good, but I'm going to smile through this one, and your mood will change. When we were children, we all practiced a self-representation. We practiced the, you know, I'm going to be the Clint Eastwood, or I'm going to be the Dolly Parton, or whatever we were choosing as our icons. Practice a new self-representation. Take 5 minutes to visualize being the person that you truly want to be. Do that as a part and parcel. Now, I could go on, but we're out of time to do that.
We're out of time.
It's in the book. Get the book. And I tell you how you get the book. You go to eldentaylor.com today. There's a picture of the book, Mind Programming. You click on that picture. It will launch a special page for you where there are hundreds of gifts, including a special gift from Dr. Rita Louise, that are yours just for getting the book. You're not getting the book from me. You're getting the book from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You get your book. Both of them have it on sale. You take your receipt number. You come back. You input that receipt. It opens another special page where you can download all these wonderful gifts, and they are truly wonderful. There's everything there from the written word, books, to hypnosis sessions, and they're yours free. All of these people, including Dr. Louise, know how important the content of your mind is to your success.
And I'm going to tell you again what I said at the beginning of the show. The book, you know, it covered everything, you know, and I kind of like being looking on that dark side because I just find it fascinating, you know, that it even happens in the first place. You know, my little ethical mind jumps in the middle and goes, dang, I can't even believe it. And there was so much more that we, like I said, have not even covered in our 2 hours together.
No, and a lot of the fun stuff, like the God helmet, the Persinger helmet, you know, for those folks that just never have had that religious experience, you know, how they can stimulate that electronically now by just stimulating some of the brain. There's some really fun stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. So what do you have coming up the pike? Are you working on yet another book?
Well, actually, I have one coming in January of 2010. It is a philosophy book, if you will. It's titled "What Does It Mean?" and it's a fun book. But my real passion is behind mind programming. Of everything that I've worked on in my life, this is one that can make a difference—a real difference.
Well, I will have to have you back on when the new book comes out because you're just a pleasure to have on the show and a plethora of information.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You're a wonderful host. I would welcome the opportunity anytime.
Great. Eldon, again, thank you so much for coming on, and you have a wonderful weekend.
And you do the same.
And have luck with your sale.
Hey,
that's Eldon Taylor, Mind Programming. If you want to get a copy of the book and all the bonus gifts, it's www.eldentaylor.com. And so next week, we're going to be talking about ADD and ADHD, managing the gift. We'll be talking with Kevin Ross Emery. He is also a medical intuitive like myself, and so we will be taking your calls for questions. And if you would like to get a medical intuitive reading, you can call us then. So till next week. Thanks for
joining host Dr. Rita Louise each week at this time for Just Energy Radio. Point your browser to www.justenergyradio.com for more show information and to contact Dr. Rita. Until next time, remember, it's all just energy.